This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Come see about us. Remy Lawrence said that to the Boston Globe this week. It was just days after she found out that her 13-year-old son, Tyler, had been shot and killed in Mattapan. Come see about us, she said, because we're not okay. Last week, authorities in Memphis released video that showed police brutally beating 29-year-old Tyree Nichols after a traffic stop. Nichols died in the hospital 3 days later. His mom said he loved skateboarding and watching the sunset. Come see about us, because we are not okay. The week has been full of headlines, video, grief, calls to action. Today, we want to focus on how to come see about each other, how to show up for each other as a community, all while remembering it's not okay. The motto of the anti-violence group Mothers for Justice and Equality. And of course, we're going to be talking about some really painful subjects this hour, so listeners, be advised. Mona Lisa Smith of Mothers for Justice and Equality is here with us, along with Reverend Mariama White Hammond, pastor at New Roots AME Church, and State Senator Liz Miranda, who represents the 2nd Suffolk District on Beacon Hill. Welcome back to all three of you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good to be here.
I just want to start by seeing about you. How are you, Mona Lisa?
I'm hopeful. You know, I remain hopeful. It's been a very difficult few weeks, but I do remain hopeful. You know, hearts go out to the mom who lost her 13-year-old son, to the mother who had to go through that awful situation with her son his life being taken, and just being so close to where she lived and him calling out for her. Hearts are heavy. And I feel like, onward, I think I'm going forward.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Mariama?
Well, I was away last week on vacation, swimming with humpback whales in the middle of the ocean. And our boat got back in. And the very first thing I saw splashed all over the news was around the video from Tyree Nichols. So I was partially rejuvenated, but like many people, I saw a spike in my blood pressure over the weekend as I sort of like processed all of that. So I'm okay, but I don't want to deny that, like many other people, I'm also not okay. It's okay to not be completely okay right now.
And how about you, Liz?
You know, I'm thankful that my sister said it's okay not to be okay, because I feel like I'm in this perpetual state of grief and mourning. My regards, I actually went to the home of the young man Lawrence's family. They live in Mattapan, which is in my district. And it's not okay when anyone's child gets murdered, like we saw on TV with Ty Nichols. But also Tyree Nichols. The other issue is that it's happening in our communities. And so I, just want to share my humanity with my community that feels they're tired. They're in pain. And we keep seeing Black death, whether it's localized or whether it's national, this sort of sense of trauma porn that keeps replaying itself. And so I am in a state of being a leader, trying to figure out how to best support my community, but also to hold myself together as a Black woman in the Massachusetts legislature, knowing that our hearts are heavier and the weight is on our shoulders to continue to do things that make our community safer and healthier.
You know, I'm so glad's not the word. I'm picking up on, Liz, the fact that you used the phrase trauma porn. Because the pornographic nature of the moment that we're living in has been particularly striking to me these last 2 weeks, right? Beginning with this drumbeat of, we're going to put a video out.
Yep.
And it's going to be unlike anything you've ever seen. Everyone's going to have to make a decision about whether or not to watch a young Black man be murdered, right? And then, you know, Sunday rolls around and the news comes about a 13-year-old boy. And we are connected to it in a way that forces us not to pretend it doesn't exist, not to pretend, and I'm looking at you, Mona Lisa, mm-hmm. that every child is our child. Every boy is our boy. But at the same time, there is something profoundly pornographic about the moment we're in, and it is hard to know how does one respond thoughtfully, responsibly, compassionately, with self-preservation in a moment that is so pornographic. And I'm not just going to spend this whole conversation going, now you answer, now you answer. Right. So let me put that out on the table and ask one of you for whom it resonates to pick it up.
Mariana. Well, I think it was really interesting. I tried not to watch. So
I didn't watch.
Being an elected official, we heard that the mayor was going to do something at 6 o'clock. I was in my district.
This was last Friday.
Yep. I'm in the community. It was a beautiful day in Roxbury. I'm having coffee at Madhouse. And everyone was checking in with each other. Like, is there going to be a riot? Is there going to be a protest? And, you know, it was eerily quiet. And I think it's because of the exhaustion that people feel. You know, when we passed police reform here in Massachusetts, we told the Commonwealth that this was going to move us forward.
It was reform, 2021.
Yeah, the reform was going to work. And now we just got data that more people were killed at the hands of police this year than any other year. And so we're in community.
I'm sorry, Boston yep. Police, Massachusetts Police, nationally?
Nationally, okay. Over 1,200 people.
Okay.
And I'm like, I'm not going. You know, I didn't want to go down to Boston Common, one, because I felt that I needed to be in community because the soul of the Black community literally is along Blue Hill Avenue, and that's my district, and I wanted to be with the people. And so I went home, and I sat on the couch, and I told my mom, I said, they're going to release this video, and I don't know what's going to happen in our community. But right in that moment, CNN played it, and we were glued. And what I mean by the trauma point, it was like it was leading up to it. It was like a blockbuster hit. And so we just sat there and watched the four videos get played over and over again. And my mom began to weep because they didn't render aid to this young man. They didn't show him dignity. And so even when you are trying to remove yourself from not watching something that you know is going to impact you physically and mentally, it was on every channel. And my mom was just sitting down to watch the 7 o'clock news, you know, and I couldn't move from the couch. And so I think for a lot of folks, you have your phones with you all the time. Can you actually run from it? And so it was deeply impactful to me and my mom. And we just sat there and watched and talked about what was so wrong about that video and what happened to that young man who was 100 yards or so from his mother's home.
You know, I definitely can feel, and I say feel what with Liz Miranda saying, because I felt that way to a certain extent, but I also felt like it was my duty to watch. Right, it was going to hurt me. It was going to make me feel uncomfortable, and but I feel like we're in a space where none of us should feel comfortable, right? That we should have the same heart in grief as that mother is feeling, right? As that you know, as she's feeling, and it took courage for her to say, I want the world to watch this. You know what I mean? I want you to watch this, because you know, when we stop watching, then we will stop reacting in the way that we need to react. In order for this stuff to end, right, we have to be as hurt and as angry as she is. And not just us as women of color, as mothers, as individuals working with those who have experienced the same horror that this mother has experienced, and this father, and this community, and her and his sister, but the same, you know, experience that they have, we see it every single day, right? And you know what made me so disturbed was the fact that I knew in my heart that this one got videotaped, but how many more happened that never got justice, that were swept under the rug, that didn't make the public, and how many more sons were brutalized by those same individuals. And then to really see that this was much bigger than even what we saw, because what we saw was like humanity breakdown, right? Those individuals could stand there and not render aid to this young man because they did not see him as a human being, right? That is the only way that they could have done it, was they had to take the human side out of it. And so it's a bigger problem for us when we have to watch that. And then every day when we go into our communities, when we're in our offices, we see mothers. I work with mothers every single day. I have young women who are part of our team that are mothers. I have youth that come and show up every day. I look at their faces every day, and I saw their faces in him. And I know that there was a bigger issue that was tearing at me, and it was the fact that you did not see him as a human being, that he was not a human being.
We're talking with Mona Lisa Smith, Reverend Mariama White Hammond, and State Senator Liz Miranda here on Radio Boston at the end of the week this week, showing up together to reflect on 2 weeks of brutal pain and violence, both around Tyre Nichols in Memphis and the death of Tyler Lawrence in Mattapan. Mariama, let me just turn to you.
Yeah, so I deeply resonate with what both my sisters have said. I think I want to take a moment as a pastor to just also say to folks, we need to take care of ourselves and each other. I think an early preaching class I took said the role of the preacher is to comfort the afflicted, but also to afflict the comfortable. And so I don't think everyone's reaction to this should necessarily be the same. There are some of us that are really hurting, and we need to ask. So I chose not to watch the video, in part because I started this year recognizing I've had some small health challenges, and many of them relate back to my poor sleeping habits. And those started the year that I had five young people shot, stabbed, some died, some almost lost life. It was
in your
parish. It was so in my organization when I was running Project Hip Hop, and it was so crazy that I just stopped being able to sleep through the night because I didn't know what call I'd get and that pattern that started all the way back in 2008 has continued to this point. And so one of my New Year's resolutions was to really take seriously changing that. So when this happened, I sort of said, oh my goodness, you know, how am I dealing with? And we have a lot of folks. We've got young people. I remember we would do yoga at Project Hip Hop, and one of our young people would fall asleep, and the other young people thought it was like disrespectful. But he finally said to me, this is one of the few places I can actually fall asleep like that. And so for those of us who have experienced so much trauma, we will need to organize. We will need to march. And it is okay if you take care of yourself in this time. It is okay if you decide for right now, I need to turn it off. I need to set some boundaries. I want you to pay attention to your sleep. I want you to make sure that you're drinking water. I know we drink other things sometimes to help us get through. I'm not gonna judge what other things you choose to do, but I need you to also drink water. Because as our Indigenous brothers and sisters remind us, water really is life, and there's a lot of science behind what water can do for us in these moments. And I need you to be with people that you love and who love you. And those are three things I think all of us should be doing all the time. But if this moment is opening up a whole lot of other stuff for you, I need you to take care of yourself. And then I need people who feel bad today but know that next week they are not going to have to keep dealing with this to ask, how do I let my pain and how do I let my anger in this moment not be quenched? How do I make sure that this is not just one bad week and next week I go back to my life as it is? So I just want to note, not everybody needs to do this in the same way. Some of us have been living this a really long time, and we need to make sure that we are okay.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and we are here in Studio 2 with State Senator Liz Miranda, Reverend Mariama White Hammond, and Mona Lisa Smith of Mothers for Justice and Equality, as we reflect together at the end of a couple of, I don't even have words, a couple of challenging weeks around violence perpetrated on our Black men and boys and sons. And we're picking that conversation back up. We took a quick breather for a drink of water right after Reverend Mariama White Hammond challenged us to find the balance between not being comfortable in this moment, but making sure that we're practicing self-care. And in that 60 seconds, everyone just immediately started talking. So I'm going to turn right back to you, Liz Miranda, and have you pick it up.
You know, one of the interesting things is that being a legislator, but a former community organizer and youth worker, you're told and taught that you're always going to be a youth worker and community organizer. And I think that's why I approach my job very differently than maybe some other legislators, because I still live in the community where I was born and raised, and we're a highly policed community. We spend billions of dollars here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts on public safety, but in our communities, people don't really feel that safe. And we're over-incarcerated. So when you see this triple threat coming in our communities, I didn't know what to do this week, and so I decided to go where my heart led me, and it was to visit a school. So I went to the KIPP in Mattapan, which actually is located at the corner of Babson Street, where someone savagely took a 13-year-old Tyler Lawrence's life. And in speaking with the young people, and I just want to share this message with adults, our kids are not okay. They wanted to talk about civics and government, and many of them had questions about why I came to this work. And when I told them the story about how I lost my brother 5 years ago to gun violence, they were all in shock. You know, they somehow thought that I would be immune to what is happening in our communities. And I asked them the same question. What keeps you up at night? I said, because what happened to me and my family kept me up at night. And I knew I had to do more and better for my communities. And almost every young person in that room mentioned how violence is impacting their social, emotional existence. And many of them were 12 and 13 years old and had already lost friends or lost family members. And one young woman in the front row had lost her uncle just weeks prior. And so we have this compounded generational and community trauma that our kids are living in, and there's not enough support. And so I hope this moment, folks that have righteous anger, realize that there is a place to be mad and a place to do more and better together to ensure that we not only make other systems that are oppressive not so deadly for our communities, but also we're losing at both ends of the stick here in our communities. And so it's incredibly important that we look to the children. I heard a quote this week by James Baldwin that said, all the children are ours. Mm-hmm. And that really has fueled me to realize that in all of our work, we have a place to take our pain and anger and be reminded that all the children belong to us.
So I'm going to play two pieces of sound here, and then we'll pick up this, because they're both underscoring the things that you just said, Liz. Earlier this week, Isaac Yablo was here in Studio 2. He's the new senior advisor for community safety for Mayor Wu. As we were getting ready to start the conversation, I faced two screens up here, CNN and Fox News, which are on mute. And I look up, and they're playing the videos, the Tyre Nichols videos right there as we're starting this conversation. And we had a lot of discussion about what is safe. And one of the things that he talked about is, you know, data versus lived experience. And here's a little bit of that.
Boston is a safe city compared to other major cities. We have some of the lowest numbers. But as I've said before, if you're talking to a person that lives on a street where there's acts of violence that are committed every year, it's going to be a hard time selling to them that we are a safe city when it's the same communities that have been impacted by this violence.
And then, Liz, following your thread further, one of the interviews that Remy Lawrence, Tyler Lawrence's mother, gave was to WBZ-TV, and she underscored this idea that all children are our children.
I can't fathom in words what kind of person starts their Sunday morning off looking to shoot a boy, any boy, because Tyler was any boy.
And again, that was a public statement. WBZ covered the sound. I recognize that what we're doing is kind of parading out people's pain, right, while we're making our points. But that idea that even in that moment, and Mona Lisa, the first time I met you, we're at a Black Ministerial Alliance meeting, and you say, what we have to understand is that every child is our child, and it's not okay.
Mm-hmm. Every child is our child, and those of us who are mothers and raise brown and Black children can definitely feel Remy's pain. But I'd like to just kind of continue on that thread about this whole generational trauma and the re-traumatization that many of us are facing. And I think what Reverend was saying was about the trigger, right? Mm. So yes, I felt that it was my obligation to watch. But as I work with so many mothers, they're triggered, you know.
And for our listeners, they should understand these are mothers who have experienced loss.
Yes, yes. And both locally and nationally that we're working with it. So, you know, at some point we have to to come to a place of when does the healing start? And, you know, some of the words that are being thrown around like Boston is a safe city, or this young man was targeted, you know, are very insensitive. And those words are re-traumatizing a lot of families as well. So I think when we talk about, like, you know, what is truly happening around us, we have to recognize that, you know, that there's this generational continuation of this this trauma that is affecting communities on a whole, and then the words that are being thrown around are causing more harm than good. I was reading the article that Adrian Walker wrote on the Lawrence shooting.
He's a columnist,
and he was having this mom share about how they lived in Norwood, and how this young man came to visit his grandparents, and the article did such a great job of humanizing him and his family and his grandfather and grandparents. And so I thought to myself, you know, if Adrian Walker, the Globe columnist, never wrote that story, and the only thing we heard was our commissioner say that he was targeted.
Boston Police Commissioner Mike
and Cox. And with the enormity of violence that's happening, not just in our community, but around the country, what would be the first thing we would think? Right, we would have normalized it. We would have said, "That was another gang shooting. That was another loss of life."
It's almost a qualifying Black death.
Yes, yes. And so, you know, so thank goodness that that the mother had the courage to go on that show. Thank goodness that Adrian Walker was such a great writer, and he was able to humanize him. But tell me why. Does this mother or this family have to fight through this, right? Why do they have to take up the pulpit and justify the life of their child, right? So all this time, just like we watched in Tennessee, right? I heard her say, I don't even have time to grieve my child, right? Because they have to step on the front line and start fighting right away to humanize their children. Why do they have to do that? And that's the bigger issue we have to ask ourselves when we talk about social responsibility and the words matter, right? Why does she have to do that? Why did Adrian have to watch that article? Why couldn't we just see that it was a Sunday morning and a 13-year-old was going to Burger King?
13-year-old
just
boy.
Just turned 13, right? I don't even consider him 13. He's 12 because he just turned 13. He was going to Burger King and he was shot down. We should be outraged, right? That mother should have been able to grieve her child. She should not have had to justify his humanity and his right to exist. So that's what I'm saying when I begin to, you know, you asked me in the beginning how I felt, and I felt hopeful. You know, I feel still hopeful, but you can see in my voice that I'm a little angry, right? Because no mother should ever have to go through this pain and then defend the human side of her child. And that's what troubles me the most, that we as leaders, right, that is allowed. That is not acceptable. That is not acceptable. I don't know how you knew it was a target. I don't know how you came to that conclusion. I don't know, right? If you know it's a target, then go solve the murder. Do you know what I'm telling you? Right? If you know that, solve the crime, right? But some things should not be said.
So I'm so glad you raised it. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to give a little context for our listeners, and we're going to continue the conversation. Mm-hmm. Remy Lawrence, Tyler Lawrence's mother, moved herself and her son to Norwood, looking for education, stability, et cetera. Grandparents who deeply love him, he had a really cherished relationship, especially with his grandfather, lived in Mattapan. And on the weekends, he would often spend the weekends in Mattapan with his grandfather. After he was murdered, Boston Police Commissioner Michael Cox made a comment saying that it was a targeted shooting, which carries very specific retaliatory implications. Oh, it was Kevin Hayden. It wasn't Michael Cox. Thank you. They're telling me in the control room. It was District Attorney Hayden. Thank you for that correction, and I apologize that I had that wrong. And it implies a particular it impugns a 13-year-old boy who was murdered. Because it applies lifestyle, retaliation, et cetera. I just need our listeners to have that context as we continue, Mariana.
Yeah. So I wanted to actually pick up on another piece that Remy Lawrence raised. She asked the question, who wakes up on a Sunday morning and goes out to shoot a child? And last night, as I knew I was coming here, one of the questions came to me, what was it like for the mothers of those police officers to watch the video and to ask the question, like, is this the child that I raised?
The Memphis police officers.
The Memphis police officers. Is this who I birthed? Is this who I went to their high school graduation? What happened? And I just want to note, and I think this is something we've been saying for a long time, there's something about Black death, the death of young people, the death of particularly young Black men, that has become okay in America. So okay that even Black police officers, who probably lived the same realities in their own growing up, can live into, function in a notion that it's okay. They knew they were being recorded.
Because it was
body cams. But they had body cams. Down. But they had body cams mm-hmm. on and still went forward. And I do want to take a moment to note that there are so many things we need to keep changing. And the fact that there was a body cam is because many of us marched in the street demanding them. The fact that there was a Black woman in the Memphis Police Department who took immediate action is because a lot of us went out and marched and demanded that. So I want to name that because I think if we do not name the places where we have also made progress, it feels even more hopeless. But I want to name those things. But nonetheless, this issue of violence strikes me in some ways the same way that I watched everyone be okay with the war on drugs devastating our communities. And now that on the whole white folks are seeing major spikes, it is destroying white communities, the level of addiction, and now we can't get it under control. Because if we had taken it seriously earlier when it was happening in our communities, maybe America wouldn't be in the same place. Mm-hmm. And if we had taken some of these issues seriously in the 80s, when it was even worse, the number of young people being shot, maybe we wouldn't have school shootings that we're having right now. And so I think I want to talk about this particular incident and these particular young people, but I also want this city, this state, this country to recognize we have a violence problem. Mm-hmm. And how bad does it have to get before we take it seriously enough to ask questions about why do people even have guns? What do we need to ask about the way our children are being raised and the way that our country is putting pressures on them that they even get in this situation in the first place? We have some tough questions and some serious action we need to take. And I'm not sure how broken we have to be before we will act.
So, Liz, in a minute, I'm gonna give us all a break for just a second again. Mm-hmm. But before we do, with Mariama's voice ringing in our ears, I'm thinking about the fact that one of the first things you said when you got here was, are we going to talk about police? Are we going to talk police reform? And it's hard to know where to stay in this space of calling out and be in the space of solutions, too. And I feel like you're straddling that line for us with those comments, Mariama. So before we take a quick break, Liz, how I want to turn to you as a legislator and find out how that's echoing for you.
You know, after the death of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery, legislatures across the country, were called to do something. And here in Massachusetts, I was a freshman representative. I wake up one day and I'm looking around to see if my colleagues are going to do that something. And there was there was already legislation for a system for police sort of accountability to de-license and license officers because Massachusetts was one of four states that did not have a process.
And that passed.
And that passed. But I went to my community and filed a piece of legislation called An Act to Save Black Lives because I was particularly interested in use of force. Folks were telling me that this did not happen in Massachusetts, but I was from Roxbury and knew that if there was black death at the hands of police, it was mostly happening in black and brown communities. And so I did some own research and learned that there are about 30 to 35 deaths a year here in Massachusetts. Many of them look like me. But I was sort of moved by Breonna Taylor in particular, because I could have been Breonna Taylor. You know, in my whole family, you know, the men have been incarcerated. I've dated men who have had situations with police. And I kept thinking to myself, is this my moment to work with my colleagues in the Black and Latino Caucus to really put something forward? And we got it done. So the House took it up under the leadership of then Speaker DeLeo. We had Chairwoman Claire Cronin, and we passed a pretty expansive law. And we said, see, we can get something done. But to be back here 3 years later, I understand why some of my friends are abolitionists and want to burn down the whole system, because we told them that reform would help. And, you know, we've gone pretty far in Massachusetts, and I know Massachusetts wants to believe that we are also immune to some of these things, but we're not. This could happen any day in any community across the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. So the reason why I wanted to talk about it was because we have to have the dialogue with people on both sides to realize that maybe reform and reimagining what we think is policing actually isn't the direction that we need to go in. Maybe healing-centered, more investments in prevention and intervention in our communities. Mariama and myself were both in great youth programs that I believe saved us as young people. She went to Stanford, I went to Wellesley, coming out of these what people would have called troubled communities that I didn't think were troubled, but they were places of human connectivity. We both became youth workers when we could have been in any career, and I think our parents both wanted us to, you know, do something else. But we came back to our communities, helped young people, and we're here today as leaders in our city grappling with what do we do next? Because police reform wasn't enough. When you have a 13-year-old boy being shot, mind you, this is not the first 13-year-old boy that's been killed in our city. In the last year alone, we've seen a 13-year-old, a 14-year-old, a 15-year-old, a 16-year-old. These are our children. And that is happening at the same time where we pass these laws and we keep pumping billions of dollars in public safety. Something is not working. We need to listen to the people and to listen to the communities. And Ayanna's favorite quote that I always think about is that the people closest to the pain need to be directing us now on what we need to be doing next. And we need to be listening to them.
You're listening to Radio Boston. I'm Tisiana Deering. And still with us in Studio 2, Reverend Mariama White-Hammond, State Senator Liz Miranda, and President of Mothers for Justice and Equality, Mona Lisa Smith. Reverend Mariama, before we took a quick pause, State Senator Liz Miranda was talking about this space that we're in mm-hmm. with reform passed and it not working. Yeah. The way it needs to and dealing with that tension. And I'm just going to turn it over to you.
Yeah, I think I want to, you know, and I also worked on that reform and I was really thankful. Liz and I share the same birthday. We're exactly 1 year apart. I was so proud of her and the way she kept pushing and really lifting that up. And I think it's just really important because Tyree Nichols' funeral was on the first day of Black History Month. And for me, it was like, we've come so far. And we have so far to go. And I just think we need to live in the tension of not yet. So the reality is, folks have fought, they have died, they have leaned in, they have stayed up so many late nights, we have marched, we have cried, and we have made progress. There are things that exist now that didn't exist when I was a young person, and in many instances, I know the people who worked on them, and I will not negate the hard and powerful work. And we are not close to the system we hope and dream of. We are not close to what justice really looks like. And I just think we have to be okay with the reality of both of those things being absolutely true at the exact same time. And we as a nation struggle with nuance. We really struggle to say that we have been both a beacon of freedom and deeply rooted in slavery and exploitation. Those are both true at the same time. And to Liz's point, I do think we are in a moment of where we need to say, what do we need to do next? I was grateful. Tuesday, I got an email. One of my staff people actually at the city passed it on to me with young people from Teen Empowerment. And I got to go to the 30th anniversary of Teen Empowerment because I remember when Teen Empowerment was created. I had friends who were in the very first group. And those young people are trying to look at calling a ceasefire. Now it's going to be hard. Let's be real. It's not going to just be easy and but one of the things I loved is they were saying, we want a ceasefire for all forms of violence. We want to talk about domestic violence. We want to talk about how poverty is violence. We want to talk about, and I was like, I love the way they're trying to bring a deep level of nuance and they're trying to lean in. And you know what? They will only be successful if more of us lean in and try to make it successful. We need to create more space for our young people to step up. And you know what? Everything is not going to work perfectly. We need to just be real that failure is part of the equation. We fail fast, we learn, and we keep moving. But no one bill, no one election of one leader, no one thing by itself is going to get us to the transformation this nation needs to be what it says it's supposed to be, but what it has always struggled to be, and it has particularly struggled for people of African descent, people of Native descent. But I don't see how we do anything but keep pushing. I don't see how we honor our ancestors by giving up.
I'm going to bring two pieces of sound here, and then I'm going to turn to you, Mona Lisa. The first is because you talked about that funeral and the sort of we've made progress and yet, right? So we have Tyree Nichols's funeral. Here is Reverend Al Sharpton, right? He's invoking Martin Luther King Jr., February 1st, 2023.
I'm gonna climb until Tyrese Nichols gets justice. I'm gonna climb until Eric Garner gets justice. I'm gonna climb until we change the laws. We're mountain climbers. We're not day traders. We're mountain climbers. And if God be for us, it's more than the whole world against us. He walks with me. He talks with me. He tells me that I'm his own.
All right, and now I'm going to come to Reverend Kevin Peterson. Sitting here in Studio 2 earlier this week, we were talking about the renaming of Faneuil Hall. He brought up Tyler Lawrence, and I kind of wanted to put a pin in that, right, and say this is really important. I'm going to put that here, and we're going to keep up with this conversation. And he and I'm very comfortable with the fact that he came back at me, and he did, and here it is.
Well, I want to say that there's no disconnection, Tiziana, and no disrespect to you.
Yeah, and I'm attempting no disrespect to
you. But if you don't get, if you're not a black person, if you're not a black person, you may miss the connection that a lot of black people will make in terms of their lived reality in this city and how there is no disconnection between the first black people being brought here as slaves and the degree to which black people are treated in 2023.
And so I am struck with that duality, Mona Lisa, that Mariama was just talking about being able to both make progress and sit with the realities of where we have failed to progress.
Well, I just wanted to again just acknowledge the huge respect I have for my sisters who are sitting here with me right now. But you know, I'm on the other side, right? Because I understand the progress that we're making and the work that's being done on the Hill and the push for reform. But the reality is that means nothing to the victims that are losing their lives every day, right? That this means nothing to the mothers who are suffering. That means nothing to the youth that we are serving in our program, and we're continually trying to reinforce to them that you can somehow find some kind of trust in law enforcement, and that you can feel safe and you can sleep at night. You know, we can continue to talk about the push and how we continue to push for reform, but the fact is that we have a hurting people. And we have people who have lost their children. We have people who are asking for justice. We have unsolved murders. We have a mental health crisis. We have an inequality in care for people. We still have an inequality in education. So, yes, those that are on the front line fighting the good fight can definitely note progress and need to note progress, because that's what keeps us going. But the fact is that the person that's being impacted, the person that Remy, she doesn't want to hear about the progress and the fact that we got to be okay with the disparity in that. We have to do more for her, right? We have to do more for her so that she doesn't have to justify the right for her son to exist, that she doesn't have to humanize him the day that he's murdered and fight for him, his space and humanity. So the fact is, and I'm glad that that Reverend Marion brought up the fact that what about the mothers of those police officers that did that heinous crime, right? What about the mental health issue that they had to be facing? That every single person on that scene had to be facing in order for that to happen, right? What about the lack of accountability in the fact that were they required to do mental health screenings, right? Who was accountable for that, right? What about the mental health of the individual that pulled the trigger that killed that young man on Sunday morning? What about the fact that we cannot even get guns off of the streets in our community, right? So we can definitely help ourselves to continue to feel like, yeah, you know, we're making progress and we got to find that balance there. But tell that to the average person. Tell that to the mother that calls me and says, you know, my daughter was murdered and there I know that the police had something to do with it and I need to get justice. Tell that to the mother that her son was murdered and there was no body camera. Or the son that was in the shootout with the police and they said he shot himself in the head and nobody in the DA's office is returning her call. Have me say that to her. That doesn't matter to her because she needs justice. She needs an advocate. She needs somebody to understand that my child's life mattered and he's a human being and I want results. I want respect. I should not have to fight for his humanity. And so that's where I would say, let's talk about the lack of equality and mental health care in our communities.
So there is no end mm-hmm. to this conversation here, right? That's the whole point of this conversation is that we're not at an end.
Mm-hmm.
We're out of time for today. And I leave us in a raw space, but an important one,
mm-hmm.
and with an invitation to the three of you, as you have been engaging with us,
mm-hmm.
to continue to do so. And I want to thank you for the time today, even though one of you said we have to sit in the discomfort, right? Mm-hmm. We have to be mm-hmm. uncomfortable. There's no great way to end this, except that it's time. And I'm grateful that you spent that time with us. So State Senator Liz Miranda, thank mm-hmm. you.
Welcome.
Reverend Mariama White-Hammond, thank you. Mona Lisa Smith of Mothers for Justice and Equality, thank you. And that's our show for today. Thanks for listening. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.